when I'm feeling that vice heavy, I know that I have access to my one, and the one is the good person. So ones are principally driven. Ones are gut. That's the gut person, right? So I have access to my gut in the language of the one who is a good person, who does things because it's the right thing to do, who does things because it needs to be done, principally driven. So I have access to that one. So that pulls me out of that sense of feeling melancholy.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Amen, Heavenly Father.
Amen.
God, thank you for today. Thank you for the resources to do this. Thank you for everybody here. And we just hand this time to your care and control. Amen, Heavenly Father.
Amen, Heavenly Father. Wow. Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show.
Yeah.
Christian, I don't like being in this seat.
Yeah.
This might be your new spot.
Nope. Don't even put that idea in his head.
It's okay. I don't like the seat either. This is my first time in this one.
Yeah. That's the biggest change to the show tonight is one of the producers is on the wrong side of the camera.
Yeah.
Christian is our guest tonight.
Yes, I am.
Well, I mean, for people who are listening only, we do have Caleb in the studio with us tonight on the microphone and not the ones and twos or quality control tonight.
Yeah, it's definitely different being here like this.
And we have Katie on the ones and twos and Jason on the quality control. And Christian is in the hot seat. I mean, the honorable seat of service.
That's right, yeah.
Best seat in the house.
Best seat in the house. Well, Christian, what are we doing here tonight?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Hi, my name's Christian. I'm an addict and an alcoholic.
Hi, Christian.
Hey, Christian.
Today, I thought part of the Indie Grant, part of the internship process here is coaching and counseling. So everyone who comes through and is a part of the internship also gets coaching. Part of coaching is personality assessments. And personality assessments are just really good tools to shift the lens on the way that maybe you foresee your internal world. A lot of people, you know, maybe follow a 12-step modality or harm reduction modality as a path of recovery or a Dharma path of recovery or, you know, California sober path of recovery, whatever the path is. But to turn the lens on the internal world and see it from a different framework, I think is very helpful. And it certainly has been helpful in my own journey of psychological and emotional development. So one of the tools that was given to me was the Enneagram. And so part of internship is we take these personality assessments, and one of them is the Enneagram. And so I thought it's been so helpful to me in my recovery. I've seen it help others in their recovery. It's been helpful to some of the interns, not so much some other ones. And so I thought, you know, let's kind of do a show where we can talk about the usefulness of Enneagram for self-discovery in alignment with someone in recovery.
Oh, yeah. Well, can we, like, before we start talking specifically about Enneagram, like, personality tests in general, there's, like, a sea of them available out there. So what sets Enneagram apart from maybe, like, Myers-Briggs or DISC or some of the other, like, popular names out there?
Yeah. Well, okay. So Enneagram is pretty old, all right? And from my understanding is it was developed by a desert father, a desert monk, many, many years ago. And it was founded on, kind of looked at that there were these seven deadly sins. And he thought if there's these seven deadly sins, then there's probably some opposites to that, good attributes. And so this desert father and others formed these, and they added two other sins or desolations. So you have sloth, anger, pride, envy, greed, gluttony, and lust. And they added fear and deceit. So it's been around for a long time. And I think that's one of the things that sets it apart. There's different ways of reading the Enneagram. Where most personality assessments kind of say you're a red, you're a yellow, you're a D, you're I, you're C, you're whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's your personality. What I like about the Enneagram is it's fluid. And the way that I was trained to read the Enneagram is even more fluid and congruent to psychological and spiritual development. So that would be my answer to why I think Enneagram is kind of separate from some of the other personality assessments.
And I think one thing that's kind of interesting about the Enneagram, which I don't think the other personality tests do as much, it shows you how each of them can relate to each other and how the different levels or the different numbers relate to each other, which I didn't really see in the others' personality tests as much.
Yeah. And Enneagram has become very popular. Yeah. A lot of companies are using that. I've even seen like job postings where we're looking for an Enneagram 8 or a Type 2. Because
type 2 diabetic.
Type 2 Enneagram. Because there is some legitimacy to it. When I did the training, what the instructor said, which I thought was good, is all frameworks are useful and all frameworks are incomplete. And I thought that was a really good way of kind of looking at it. So whenever I'm teaching the Enneagram or we're implementing Enneagram, I don't see it as the end-all, be-all, hey, this is the thing.
Right.
But I see it as a piece of the puzzle and just like a turning of the gem to my internal world to help me understand myself and others.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful. What really helped me was me and my wife did it together. We did that. That's why we have kids. But we also did the Enneagram.
I love that you made the joke. We were all thinking.
We also did the Enneagram. And so learning her type and my type helped us to really understand how each of us functioned and kind of how our communication styles are. And it helped us to better understand each other, better communicate with each other, better resolve conflicts. So it's been very helpful for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because like this one, I've taken a lot of personality tests before. And most of the times, like, I'll read the results. And like, depending on like the way the wind is blowing and like the position of the moon in the sky and what socks I have on that day,
yeah,
really determines what my personality is going to be like. Whereas I read the results and I'm like, wow, that sounds okay. Whereas like when I got the results of the Enneagram, which was also like a very thorough assessment, like with like, you know, 200 questions and then a thorough answer where I'm like, I'm reading through like my assessment and it's like almost spooky. Where I'm like, whoa, okay.
Good. I'm glad you had that experience.
Cause yeah, that was the first time like with a personality assessment. Cause like I try to stay away from those. Cause it, you know, to me, I'm like, what benefit does this really have to provide me other than like, oh, here's some letters that describe you today.
Right.
That's kind of how I feel, honestly.
That's how you feel?
Yeah. With a lot of the personality tests, they're like so spot on, but I'm like, what real world usage can I get out of taking this test? Honestly, like, where is this going to help me? Like exactly what you were saying, basically.
Yeah. And I think that's where it's all about how you utilize these things. So in this description of the Enneagram, I like that. This says that the harmony method, right? Through the wounds, we are healed. The path of ascension comes by way of dissension in the Jesus story. And it is the same with us. At first, where your Enneagram type might ring the truest will be in the negative or false self. The 9 Enneagram types correlate with the 7 deadly sins, said that. And then also, it's the 9 attributes, the 9 positive things in the 9 higher self are 9 attributes of God. So you have the peaceful person, the good person, the loving person, the effective person, the original, the wise, the loyal, the joyful, and the powerful. And so the harmony method, what I like is, I'm going to go to this. The harmony method is taking it into triads. So if you're imagining the Enneagram, mm-hmm, and it's 9, 1, it's all the numbers kind of go in a circle, right? Mm-hmm. The top 8, 9, and 1 is what's considered your gut. Those are gut people. 2, 3s, and 4s, we're heart people.
You're ugly.
7, 6, and 5 are head people or mind people. So, or they call them IQ people. So that's 7, 6, and 5. So IQ people protect themselves from vulnerability of the heart feelings by moving into their heads. They engage in the world through mental activity, knowledge, and planning for contingencies.
Yeah, that's spot on with
100 questions. They trust reason and brain power. Caleb here is a 5. They trust very reason average. And brain power, dismissing heart people as lightweights and gut people as reactionary. Which is pretty cool. We have the head, heart, and gut. I didn't even mean to do that.
That's what the awesome. Fuck, Caleb? Why would you think that of me?
Dude, that's really cool. I didn't mean to do
that. I thought you that's did that awesome. On purpose as you're going through this. Cool.
So EQ people, which are heart people, 2, 3s, and 4. We just did Katie's assessment. She's a 2.
Katie is not a 2. You be nice to her. Yeah. Sorry, I can't. Like, I'm not going to stop.
Taylor is a 3, and I'm a 4. EQ people trust heart connection more than anything else. They rely on feelings and relationships to guide them. When connections break, they feel distressed and do things to regain affection and approval. They may also dismiss gut reactions as too judgmental and find head people unfeeling. Heart people are not always in tune with their own emotions, but really seeking validation through other people's emotions. So knowing that I'm a heart person, right, and this was a very big moment for me and when I did the Enneagram, is accepting that I am like a person who's in tune with my emotions. So I am an emotional person. And I think throughout my life, being a man and a father and all these things, I thought that that was an aspect of myself I rejected, I didn't like about myself. I thought it made me weak, you know? But embracing that has actually been a path forward to more freedom and more strength.
Right, like as opposed to, like you said, there's the 7 deadly sins and then there's like the flip side of it. So now you have this assessment saying like, hey, no, this is actually a good thing about you. But it's kind of like in the 12-step modality when we look at, you know, quote unquote defects of character, and it's like, it's not necessarily something that's wrong. It's just something that's out of balance. Yeah. You know, it's all about how you look at what's in front of you instead of shying away from it and trying to change this part of you, embracing like, this is just who I am and that's okay and this is how I operate.
Yeah, acceptance. So GQ people, gut triad people, that's 8, 9s, and 1s. So 2 people, you know, Dean is an 8. Our friend Kirk is an 8. 2 very powerful individuals. They react instinctively. They know in their gut whether they like someone or if something is good or bad. Trusting their gut more than anything or anyone else makes it easy for them to jump in or pull away without a second thought. In the heat of a moment, gut people can judge head people for their slow deliberations and heart people as being too concerned for what people think. Which in my relationship with both these Dean and Kirk, that's been total dynamic between us.
It sounds very accurate. Like even one of the situations we had in Montana where the headlights went out on the bus that we were all riding in, and Dean just knew right away what he wanted to do. And we got this light out of the bus and started a generator to run this light off of to get home. And that was like the only way it was going to work. And Dean like just made the decision there. So
yeah, you duct taped a flashlight on these moose antlers on the front of a bus in the middle of pitch black Montana with no streetlights.
But you got back.
Yeah, we did.
So I want to read this other part because I think what's important is that kind of like the pathway to ascension is dissension, right? And I think that's like some things are true, they're true, they're true. And a lot of us who are in recovery, we know that because a lot of us have descended into the deepest parts of darkness or hell or whatever. So Teresa of Avila, Spanish nun, said that the sinner is actually one who does not love himself or herself enough. We do not see or admire the whole self. So we split and try to love the good self and reject the bad self. But Jesus told us to leave the weeds and the wheat to grow together until the harvest, lest we destroy the wheat by pulling up the weeds. The Enneagram allows us to see and embrace our shadow, the part of us that most carries shame.
I'm gonna need a physical copy of that one.
Questions, comments, concerns?
No, I think it's spot on with like the part of ourselves that carries the most shame, because like, because my Enneagram is an 8, and mm-hmm. so it's like be like, oh well, I'm too bossy, I'm too direct, I don't care enough about people's emotions, like all these things are like, I actively, I'm like, these are things I need to change about myself, because I'm surrounded more by maybe like people who are more in tune with emotions, or people who are more in tune with logic and reason, whereas I'm just like, let's go, let's do it, like rip and run, let's go, you know. And it's like, oh well, I'm supposed to change this piece of me, instead of it being like, okay, no, I should just approach it differently. There's nothing wrong with this. It's just, you know, accept it.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to an image here on the screen. I don't know if the team is going to put this image up on the screen right now, but if you're an 8, and at Most High, we talk about this thing called congruence. So what you think, what you say, how you feel, and how you act is all in alignment. And when that's in alignment, you become a very powerful individual, and you find peace, right? So if you are a gut person, it's about how do you connect with your heart and your head. Mm-hmm. And so an 8 is also a 2, which is the loving person. And an 8 is also a 5, which is the wise person. Mm-hmm. So the reason why I like this method of reading the Enneagram, because there's other methods, like an arrow method, there's a narrative method, but this method of the harmony triads is about connecting your head, heart, and gut. Mm. So you, as an 8, have access to the 2, which is the loving person, the helper, the one that can have compassion on somebody, that sees a need and wants to fulfill it personally. You feel like, I want to do that. And that's an aspect to you. And that's why I like Enneagram, because it's not just saying, oh, you're an 8, there it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's and this specific way of reading it, because it's saying that there's these other parts of you that you have access to. Mm-hmm. And then the wise person who wants to know the information, who wants to dig into the facts and understand. And integrating these three parts is really important. So for me, being a 4, my virtue is originality, creativity, mm-hmm. right? That's my virtue. My vice is envy and melancholy. So when I was first taught this, I'm also a 1 and I'm also a 7. Jason here doing quality control, he's a 7. So we're on the same. So he has access to the 4, which is totally, 4s are like, we have a depth of emotion, mm-hmm. very creative. We need to stand out, do things like paint our nails black or design our own clothes, mm-hmm. because we cannot be like everybody else. Mm-hmm. There's an incessant need that we have to stand out in some way. So my vice would be melancholy or envy. So when I experience often, it would be melancholy. Melancholy is nothing's worth. Like, I don't know if you've ever read Ecclesiastes, but like Ecclesiastes is like, it's just another day, nothing matters. So when I'm feeling that vice heavy, I know that I have access to my 1, and the 1 is the good person. So 1s are principally driven. 1s are gut. That's the gut person, right? Mm-hmm. So I have access to my gut in the language of the 1 who is a good person, who does things because it's the right thing to do, who does things because it needs to be done, principally driven. So I have access to that 1. So that pulls me out of that sense of feeling melancholy. So it's like I get 2 in my 4-ness, right? Mm-hmm. So like you're saying, if you're 2 in this 8-ness, powerfulness of like you're finding yourself being way too, you're not considering other people, mm-hmm. is accessing the 2 that you have access to in your heart. So the 1 that took me the longest is the 7, and the 7 is the joyful person. Mm-hmm. And that took me years to figure out what brings me joy. Mm. And so once I kind of figured that piece out, it's like I could sense that sense of congruency that we talk about here at Most High,
right?
That sense of self-acceptance, because I found things that brought me joy.
And at what point, like in your recovery, were you introduced to the Enneagram and the idea of the congruency?
Well, probably like 6 or 7 years into recovery.
And
it was something that someone brought to you for the first time, and then you took the test.
Yeah, I hired a coach, okay. A life coach, because I was dealing with so many things. I had a for-profit business, I had the nonprofit, I have a family, and I had all these kind of areas, and coaching was one that where I could go and show up to coaching and bring any of those issues up. And if I brought up an issue like, how do I form a good board of directors for my nonprofit? We would sit with the whiteboard and we would think through that. Or if I came in and I was like, I'm having relationship issues, and we would talk about that. Mm-hmm. So coaching kind of opened that up, and he used it much like I use it here, which is as a tool to help me to understand myself and to accept myself ultimately.
Okay. And so like drawing that connection to like being in early recovery and now not knowing, like, I don't know, I'm just thinking back to when I was new and not knowing what an emotion is, not knowing how to feel things, not knowing how to lead, not knowing anything. Like, I don't know how to person, you know? And so like, would you think like taking an assessment in early recovery could be beneficial? Or do you think that maybe like waiting a little bit, until, you know, you have like a, like at least a little bit of a standing of what it means to be a human adult?
Well, I mean, like you could take any assessment, right? You could be on Facebook and be like, what fucking bird am I, right? And you'd be like,
well, you're
oh,
a blue heron.
I'm a blue heron.
Yeah.
I'm a petit oiseau. So you can do that. But if you have guide, if you have someone that's guiding you, mm-hmm. right? Someone who's trained in whatever that methodology is, then they can help you. I think we just experienced that with one of our interns took her assessment, and her assessment, her numbers were like all high, like in every number, mm. right? And so whenever somebody is like that, it tells me that there's probably some confliction inside, that there's still some mess to sort out, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked through, rather than just going, okay, here's what you scored the highest on, we talked through several different types. We talked through about things. And so as we continue in our relationship and internship, we continue to kind of reference the Enneagram as we're going forward to see is that still accurate, is that helpful to you, right? And is it in I mean, when you were shown the Enneagram, did you ever really return to it? I know like part of the task was like to go and read, but
yeah, I was really supposed to read and supposed to probably work through a little bit of this workbook, but I think I was so dismissive, even though like when you gave the presentation, I felt like my results were pretty spot on. Like I felt like it made sense to me, like why I was this way and like how I didn't really view people's emotions and didn't really take it into account when I'm making decisions because I try to make them logically. But I don't know. I think I was like more dismissive than I should have been on the results, but I think they're really accurate, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, so for you, it was a tool that you didn't really find too useful.
Yeah. Maybe not practicality wise, but yeah. I liked understanding why I was considered this way.
I mean, when it came up as a five, I was like, oh yes, that's yeah. totally. It's definitely helped us organizationally understanding that.
That's true.
You know, knowing that for a time we had a 5, 8 and a 2. So Dean and well, you and Caleb were on the same triad, right? Mm-hmm. So you might find there's a good connection between the two of you, right? Conversely, talking about that.
Yeah.
So there's yeah, like I think there's benefits like organizationally for us to know what each person's kind of part is. And then we kind of can understand how to best serve that person.
Yeah.
And I think somebody for an early recovery, it's just a matter of just kind of watching. And people get mistyped all the time. My daughter was typed as a 9, which is a peaceful person. She's also, my wife is a 9. And after kind of furthering on with it, we discovered, all right, you're really a 2. And so I think that's kind of what I like about Enneagram is there's some fluidity. Mm-hmm. Also, I found I coached somebody who, when I'm coaching her, she was retired. And so she really identified as an Enneagram 2. But when she was at work and she would describe who she was and how she was when she was a CEO at one of a large corporation in Georgia. Yeah. She really was at work. She was an 8. Like she showed up to work as a powerful person, mm-hmm. but in her personal life, she showed up more as a 2, as a helper. So sometimes you might be showing up at work as an 8 because that's what the work is demanding. And so that you're accessing that part of you the most.
Always an 8. It's exhausting.
But when you sit with somebody who's seeking you to help guide them through a path,
okay,
you might be accessing more of the 2.
Yeah.
I don't foresee you being like this is my way and this is how
it's my way or the highway. Yeah, pull yourself up by the bootstraps or get out.
But I guess that's what you were kind of referencing, like when you were saying the two other numbers that we're generally connected with, you can always reference that in other parts of your life, I guess.
Yeah,
that's how it can be beneficial to you.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Like, I think for you personally, watching you grow and learning new equipment and tapping into your heart person, right? And understanding that, all right, maybe I'm not always taking people's feelings into consideration when I'm making decisions. Mm-hmm. And then I think what's to follow is you kind of tapping into this powerful person and what that person is and how you kind of wield that power. Because I definitely can see you as a leader type, right? I mean, like when we first put you on the podcast, your first time, you naturally took over as the host.
I did do that. I just felt like someone had to do it. And that was, I learned that today, taking the Myers-Briggs, it classified me as an executive, which is like in a leadership role, I guess, for that test. And so it kind of tracks, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are there any like situations where you think using an Enneagram might not be beneficial or could be, you know, causing more harm than good? Or was that kind of just depend on who's guiding you through it?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you put too much stock on really anything.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like when I blame everything because I'm an Aries, so. Yeah.
It's always, Mercury's always in fucking retrograde.
Mercury's like, always got the Gatorade.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think if you put too much stock in any of these kind of modalities, you risk the chance of being fundamentalist. You risk the chance of.
Right. You lose your
humanity. You lose
humanity.
The plot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these things are meant to be like what they said about it being all models being useful, but all models being incomplete.
Right.
So if you know that, then you can take and pull what is helpful and what's useful.
And leave the rest.
And leave the rest.
Take what you need and leave the rest.
All right. So let's go over this type eight. Is that cool?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. Eights are self-confident, strong and assertive, protective, resourceful, straight-talking, and decisive.
I'm not very straight, though.
Straight-talking.
Can't do that either.
Kind of.
But can also be egocentric and domineering. Eights feel that they must control their environment, specifically people, and sometimes become confrontational and intimidating. Eights typically have problems with their tempers and with allowing themselves to be vulnerable. At the best, self-mastering, these eights use their strength to improve others' lives, becoming heroic, magnanimous, and inspiring. The basic fear of an eight of being harmed or controlled by others. Basic desire is to protect themselves. Their virtue is power. Their vice, lust. Oh. Key motivation, so this would tie up into like, you know, kind of as childhood. Want to be self-reliant, to prove their strength and resist weakness, to be important to the world, to dominate their environment, and to stay in control of their situation.
Can you tell I like really had issues playing God?
But I feel like when I met you, I don't think this, I would have seen that type.
No, because when you first met me, I was like, you know, like where it talks about being controlled by others.
Yeah.
That was like, I was still allowing others to control me because that was, I wasn't comfortable with who I was. And so I was whoever you said I was, yeah. Or whoever I thought you needed.
Which is a characteristic of a two.
Yeah.
So the twos will lose themselves in helping. So it's like, I'll help you. And then you lose yourself.
Yeah.
And then no one's there to help you.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, I've been helping you this whole time. Why aren't you helping me now? And then resentment and anger can begin to build.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I love, like, when I was reading the results, it was like, yeah, you're very strong and courageous and powerful, and you also have intimacy issues. And I was like, you know what? Shut up. Nobody asked you.
Let's see. But as an eight, you also have access to your two. Twos are empathetic, sincere, warm-hearted. They're friendly, generous, and self-sacrificing, but can also be sentimental, flattering, and people-pleasing. They're well-mannered. I mean, they're well-meaning and driven to be close to others, but can slip into doing things for others in order to be needed. They typically have problems with possessiveness and acknowledging their own needs. At their best, they're unselfish and altruistic, and they have unconditional love for others. So a two's basic fear is of being unwanted or unworthy of being loved. A two's basic desire is to feel loved. Their virtue is loving, and their vice, pride. So their key motivation is they want to be loved, to express their feelings for others, to be needed and appreciated, to get others to respond to them, to vindicate their claims about themselves. That's the two.
Yeah.
So you get the virtue, but you also get the vice.
Yeah.
Right? So if you think about this Enneagram, you have the numbers on the outside. As you're moving toward each of these three points, you're getting closer to the center. So some people would say you're getting closer to God. Some people would say you're getting closer to your true self. Some people would say you're getting closer to your authentic self. Some people would say you're getting closer to your higher self. Whatever fucking word you want to use.
You're getting closer to it.
Use the word. But if it's true, it's true, it's true, right? So this idea of congruence, this idea of being all the parts of ourselves and fully embracing them, along with the weaknesses of them, that it makes us more congruent, it makes us more powerful, and it gives us more peace and acceptance for ourselves, which in turn allows us to have more peace and acceptance for other people, right? So let's go to your five, which is also Caleb here. Fives are alert, insightful, and curious. What are we doing? What time are we going to be there? How many times do we got to go? Wait a minute, you said that we were going to... I was just following up about that thing. They are able to concentrate and focus on developing complex ideas. Absolutely. Like a lot of training I handle, I go, I think Caleb can help you with that, right? Caleb's really good at training and teaching. Independent, innovative, and inventive. They can also become preoccupied with their thoughts and imaginary constructs. They become detached, yet high-strung and intense. You really hold that internally, though.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I've seen you when you're that way. They typically have problems with eccentricity.
Don't look at
nihilism.
Me.
Well, nihilism and isolation. At their best, they're visionary pioneers and often ahead of their time and able to see the world in an entirely new way. Their basic fear is being useless, helpless, or incapable.
No, wait. Because before the show, Caleb comes up to me and he was like, I'm just scared I'm not going to add any value to the show tonight.
Yeah.
Like, do you want me on the show? Like, before, like, do you want me on the show tonight?
I'm usually behind the camera.
Yeah. And that his basic desire is to be capable and competent.
Yeah. That's why I ask other questions.
And which also came through when we did your values work, right? Yeah, that's one of the other tools we use is having people do their values work and identifying values. And that's one of your big...
Competency was so high up there for me.
Yeah. So that's why the questions... You know, the questions aren't always out of fear. A lot of the questions are coming because, all right, I want to be competent. I want to know what I'm doing.
Prepared.
I want to be prepared.
Yeah.
Virtue is wisdom. Vice, greed. Oof. Their key motivation is to possess knowledge, to understand the environment.
Yes. Yes, it is, Caleb, isn't it?
Some of his buddies are in here laughing. To have everything figured out as a way of defense and to be able to assess threats in the environment.
Our little mouse over there.
Yeah. Assess threats.
Yeah. My God. I forgot that was even part of my personality for a second. I'm like, wow, let's really talk about Caleb here. You don't need to look at me.
So those are your... three parts for the both of you, right? You both have these access to all that. And so it's about the self-knowledge for you to acknowledge whenever you're getting. So if you think about that, I'm going to put this image on the screen again. So if you think about you have like the further out, and so you guys can see it here.
Cool.
The further out, right? The more I'm in my fourness, the more I'm pulling towards my vices, right?
I'm pulling towards envy and melancholy. It means I've stayed in my foreignness a little too much. I've tried to be unique too much. I've tried to overfocus on being creative. I tried to create something that's amazing. And I'm stuck in that to the point that I start to kind of like deteriorate into these vices. And that's why my virtue is the goal to find what bring joy, right? Mm-hmm. Hang out with people that make me laugh, right?
Yeah.
Do something that I find joy, go to the beach or take a trip, take a long drive. That's something I find joy in. Or accessing my one, which is the responsible one, to just do what I need to do. And so that's this image that you're seeing as you kind of center in closer, you begin to embody your power, or I begin to embody my creative, my good, and my joy. Mm. So at my highest self, I'm creative, good, and joyful. Mm-hmm. So when I'm sensing those three things and I'm operating at that high level, I'll find myself being very effective. Things aren't as hard. There's a kind of rhythm and a flow to life that I'm kind of in.
Yeah.
Jason's over here shaking his head. Yes. And I think it's the same for y'all to become more integrated. You're accessing and think about just how, if you describe yourself as this powerful, loving and wise. Hmm. Like who doesn't want to kick it with someone who's powerful, loving and wise? You know what I mean? Like that's a powerful person. And that's like what we would say is that's your higher self or your true self. That's really who you are behind all of the ego manifestations of fear and self-protection and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So I guess learning about the Enneagram for the first time, like it tells you about, you know, how your three numbers are connected. And so after you're kind of aware of that, you can, I guess, use that knowledge to kind of balance out your life and build up the other numbers. That's what the purpose of it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that one of those things, like if I'm like at work, right, and I find myself becoming too rip and run, too direct to the point, like then I can look at, okay, no, it's my like emotive side that I'm like out of touch with, like what do I,
yeah,
what about being, was it a two you said?
Yeah.
Like what about being a two do I need to like lean in to kind right. of balance out?
And there would be spiritual practices that we would identify, mm-hmm. mantras that we would identify. Is it breathing? Is it a certain mantra that you're going to say? Is it a prayer that you say? Actual tools to help you to kind of pull out of that when you're over in that mode. Because no one wants to be with someone who's like completely full of themselves and full of power.
No, yeah. It actually sounds like a great time. Sign me up.
Yeah.
To watch, maybe.
You would.
Or somebody who's like fully envious and melancholy. That's like, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you would develop, there's things that you would develop, and then you would also learn about those other parts of yourself. So reading about the two, mm-hmm. or reading about the five, right? You kind of read the eight and were like, okay, that's it, that's me. But when you read the two, there might be pieces when you read about a two's description, and you can find this on Enneagram Institute. Again, most models are going to be presented in an arrow method of reading the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. So this harmony triad is not as popular, and it's fairly new. I mean, it's maybe like 7 to 10 years old.
Okay.
But the type descriptions are going to be pretty accurate. So reading about the two and saying, okay, what are these, when I'm reading the two, what are pieces there that maybe I don't know how to access?
Yeah.
Right? This is the other thing I find. Like, anyone who's been through the steps and has had significant time in recovery, pursuing self-discovery and spiritual, physical, mental, and emotional growth is usually a little further along than most people, right? Most humans don't have to face the dark parts of themselves.
Yeah.
Right? Like the darkest part of themselves is eating Taco Bell or, you know.
God, I wish that was the darkest part of myself. Right.
So most people don't have to. So for somebody who doesn't have the gift of recovery that we have, you know, when they take the assessment, it's really clear when they take the assessment because you can see the numbers. Mm-hmm. But for some of us in recovery, we're a little more rounded and a little further developed than I think most humans are. So I think, like, you're probably way more in congruence than most people would be, most eights. Mm-hmm. you know, because you've done a lot of self-work, because you've faced these shadow parts of yourself.
At Taco Bell.
At Taco Bell. In the Taco Bell bathroom, probably.
That's where my fifth step was. And it sure did take an hour. No, I'm kidding.
Jeez. That was like a dad joke, bro. You're hanging out with your dad too much.
Damn it. Yeah. We share an office now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought, like, if anyone who's listening to this wants to know more about it, you know, certainly if there was enough people who were interested in it, I would be happy to do some sort of training or kind of overview.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of dads, my dad was wondering, how someone would be able to access to take this test. Because he did a free sample online one day, but is never, because his words were like, oh, those aren't cheap. So if someone did want to take the test, how would they go about that?
I mean, they can contact me, or there are free assessments out there. If you just Google free Enneagram assessment, there'll be a bunch out there. And if you have someone kind of talking you through it, because a lot of those assessments are so quick, right? So you need someone to help you talk through it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. The first time I did it, it was like so complicated. So I'm glad you were there to like show me kind of like what everything meant.
Complicated? Yeah. Dog, it was how do you associate with this word? What does this word mean? Oh, sick. Like that.
I think for some people, just this type of thing, it kind of goes over their head sometimes. Like this... I don't know. It just doesn't really register with me. Like when I'm looking at it for the first time, like I need it to be explained, especially with all the arrows and the way they're connected and how the results came out. Like I didn't understand.
Oh, understanding the results. Oh. Yeah. I'm like that.
I do like, the WEPS test is the one that we use. Mm-hmm. WEPPS, WEPS.com, or just Google WEPS test. That's a pretty comprehensive test. And the results they give you all your numbers.
Yeah. It wasn't like 18 pages.
And they show you like 19. Resourceful, less resourceful. Right. And so if you do have someone who's a coach who's trained in it, or a counselor who's trained in it, or a friend who's trained in it, they can help you to sort through. The other method is a narrative method, which takes a lot more
time. This one's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Richard Rohr has wrote a lot of really great books on the Enneagram.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. And then we have books here that we use, and workbooks that I give to everybody once they take it. So maybe you should bring yours back so I have an extra one here.
Sorry, I will.
Because I love it. You're like, well, what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, now, like, do you feel like there is like a real life application to your Enneagram results?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think based on hearing kind of how Christian too, how he used his Enneagram results and like worked with a life coach and, you know, talking about board members for the company and everything like that, and how I could maybe access my 8, which is the powerful person, or my 7, which is the joyful person, and get those in congruence, I feel like that would actually be beneficial for me. Because I feel like I was dismissive of maybe the other numbers. Like, I just looked at it, you know, as a 5, and then just kind of, like, stopped from there, honestly. Right. So I could get in congruence, it would be helpful.
Well, because for me, when I was, like, seeing more about, like, the secondary and, like, tertiary number, I'm just kind of like, because it's more like, you know, you had mentioned, you know, parts of us that we might not know how to tap into. Yeah. Whereas I was like reading, especially in the 2, there's parts of myself that I have very intentionally shut off.
Yeah.
And so it's like as a defense mechanism, as that protection, because it's one of those, you know, like, no, like I don't want people to control me. I don't want anyone to make me feel small. And so in order to do that, no one gets to know me. Yeah. If you don't know me, you can't make me feel small because you have no ammunition. But it's like that is like an overcorrection. It's not saying like that is a healthy thing to do. So it's like looking at the 2 is kind of like, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, like you probably could have come to that conclusion through step work or through sitting with a counselor or sitting with a good friend and talking all this stuff out. You probably could come to that conclusion too, right? Like the framework is just there to help to put a language and kind of like a framework to it, like a roadmap and a path towards it. And that's all that really, you know, unfortunately, like we need all these things like language and steps and spiritual kindergartens to help us to navigate the internal world, because we're not taught the internal world.
Well, Osmosis Jones did not go over emotions with me, okay?
Who's that?
Caleb, did you have Osmosis Jones?
I did not.
Oh my God. It was literally like two drugs inside of you. Like, as it was a cartoon, they were like medications and they were like literally at war on the inside of you. But it was about your physical health, not your mental health.
Oh. Yeah.
Damn, I really health hope. Class? No, this was just like on Cartoon Network. Oh. I don't know.
Someone Will is knows. Like Osmosis Jones.
Someone comment right now. Osmosis Jones, yeah. Please.
Yeah, we're not taught about the internal world, and most of us don't really get taught about it until we hit a brick wall or go to jail or almost lose our family or lose our family or lose a limb. Part of that is because we don't really call attention to it or feel like we need to deal with it until it's too late. And so we've tried to like teach some of these things to like young people. And mm-hmm. I think the younger that you are, you're relatively young in recovery to be getting all these things and to have so much more life ahead of you to understand these parts of yourself, which has been beautiful to witness as you hang out and come hang out with us on Friday nights and sing karaoke and host the show. Is seeing someone who's getting it at a very young age and pretty early in the process of recovery, it's cool to see because that means that other people can, you can attract other people and other people will go to sit with you. They wouldn't sit with me, right? Or Caleb.
They're definitely not sitting with Caleb.
Okay. Yeah, well, because Caleb would have to raise his hand at the end of the meeting and say that he wants to sit with you.
No, is it okay? Like, do you want me to sit with you? Is it okay? Yeah. Like, for real, sure, like, is it okay? Like, do you I just want to make front? Sure I add value to this chair.
You want to start at the front of the book? You want to start at the back? Where do you want to start at? You want to do this book? Or this book was also really good, too. I don't know. Sure.
So, like, if we go get our nails done together, are you going to, like, how many times are you going to go through the color before you decide on the one?
I only do black. I don't know.
Oh, word. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've covered Enneagram.
Yeah. That was really insightful. I don't know. Like, this is just, you know, because definitely as a person who always kind of didn't give weight to personality tests or anything like that, because it's just kind of like, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. that's cute and fun. Which friend's character are you? Like, this is one yeah. of those. Yeah. Like, this is one of those where it's like, well, no, like, I can actually see real world value and application to it, and especially like seeing the alignment with 12 step, you know, looking at your shadow self as well, you know, looking at those deeper parts of who you are and, you know, and not being ashamed of it, like actually like, no, like that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for adding value to the show tonight,
trying,
Caleb.
Trying.
Caleb, you added value. Yes.
And yes, I did want you on the show tonight.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks for letting me know. I was just making sure.
You were very capable and competent.
Thanks. Yes. That's what I needed to hear yes. to be here.
And you looked really good with your 5 o'clock shadow. So thank you to our donors, supporters. Thank you to Katie on the ones and twos, for Jason doing quality control, to our host, Sarah, and to the in-studio audience. This has been an episode of The Most High Show.
Hell yeah. All right.